Your help and for asking Ray for me to speak, and it's good to be here this evening, and I'm glad I'm able to speak to you. It's finally here, the end of semester. I remember I come as a freshman. I'm a freshman now. I started out with all these high expectations about what college life was going to be. It's a change. I live in a small town. I go to a church with 35 people in it, and I look out at the crowd tonight, and there's so many more than that, for sure. And so it's a change for me. College was, and I came in with all these expectations of seeing what it was like. Some of the expectations got filled, and some of the expectations didn't. And so I'm sure a lot of you feel that way, the same thing about me. We have all these expectations when we come into college about my spiritual life is going to grow. This is going to happen. This is going to happen. I'm going to learn more. I finally get to work on my major and graduate and become what I want to be and what I've been wanting to be all my life. And we're filled with all these expectations. I was filled with the expectation to speak, and I didn't think that I would catch laryngitis 4 days before it happened. And so if my voice cracks tonight, you'll have to bear with me, so I can't get too high-pitched. But we start out with all these expectations. Some of them are good, and some of them happen, but some of them fail. We expect grades, our friends. And in the same way we expect things, tonight I want us to look at a story together about two men who expected something in their lives as well. Most of us are familiar with the resurrection story, about Jesus giving himself on the cross for our sins and dying so that one day we can be raised back up. But there's a story tonight that I want us to look at that you might not be as familiar with, and that's found in Luke chapter 24. Luke chapter 24. This is a story some of us might not know as well as all the other resurrection stories, but it's a story that takes place on Resurrection Day. It's Sunday, about noon, the sun's high in the sky, and it's been a long weekend for all the followers of Christ. It's been a rough one, if that. They've had to go through and witness all these things that have happened. They've had to witness Jesus dying on the cross. They've had to witness seeing his mother and his family there crying at the feet of Jesus and knowing that their Savior went into the tomb to die. And it has been really hard for these people. And so our story tonight is based on two men and Jesus. And here's where we find ourselves in Luke chapter 24. Now start with me in verse 13. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them. But they were kept from recognizing him. So we have these two guys walking along the road from Emmaus. And it says that this Emmaus road is about 7 miles from Jerusalem. So they're on a 7-mile walk to where they need to go to their designation in Emmaus. And one thing I'm not really sure about is how Jesus hid himself from these people. I was talking to my friends and we came up with a lot of different conclusions. Maybe he had some kind of invisibility cloak, or maybe he did something that would hide his face from them so they couldn't see him. I don't know why he was hid from them. I believe God just did it so they wouldn't know who he was. But for some reason, he was hid from these two men knowing who they were. And I believe early in this story that it shows two things that connect with us in our lives. I believe that we get caught up in life so much about the little thing or big things that happen in our life that hurt us so much that sometimes, like these men, we fail to recognize the appearance of Jesus. I believe we get caught up in schoolwork, so busy. We got finals coming up. We have summer to look forward to. And right now, it's a hard time for us to stay focused on what we need to do because we're studying. We're getting prepared, making preparations for summer and our vacations. It can be hard to stay focused on God. And sometimes we have to ask ourselves a question. Am I so busy in life right now that I fail to focus where Jesus is in my life? Fail to focus that sometimes he's right in front of me as well. And another observation that could be made is that sometimes Jesus hides himself for us to know our feelings about him. Maybe he stays back a little or covers his face from us to say and show us, and put us through a trial to know, is Jesus really there for us when we need him? And that's two things that these men faced along with what we face today. And look at the next part of this story, the rest of verse 17. It says, they stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, are you only a visitor to Jerusalem and did not know the things that have happened there in these days? What things? He asked. And I think this is very important. It says they stood still. Right in the middle of their journey, they stopped. They put their hands in their pockets. They looked down to the ground like we would if we were upset. I don't think it needs some kind of theological explanation to understand that what these men were just upset. They were sad about all the things that were happening. Like I said earlier, these men had had it rough for a weekend. Jesus had it worse, but these guys had it rough too. You have to imagine, they were expecting this guy to come and save their souls. And they had to witness all these things that the perfect Lamb of God had to suffer. And now it has just gone to bits. And keep on looking at the story. It goes on. Well, he asked him if you don't know what this means. And it creates an irony because they thought this visitor, Jesus, didn't know what had gone on. But in reality, Jesus knew more about the situation than they ever did. So keep on going. Verse 19, what things, he asked. He said, about Jesus of Nazareth, they replied. He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but they didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. But then some of our companions went to the tomb and found that just as the woman had said, but him they did not see. And so finally, we see why these men just stopped in the middle of the road, why they're silent about these things, why they're so upset. Because what the problem is, that Jesus had not been risen from the dead. Did you notice that? In the beginning, he called him a prophet. He wasn't the Savior anymore to them. He wasn't somebody that they had been expecting for hundreds of years to come and save their souls. He was just another man who died according to them. They had built all their hopes up on this, but without the resurrection, without Jesus coming back from the dead, it was nothing. And that was all in their minds. And imagine being in these guys' positions. This is what they had their whole life worked up for. They've read the scriptures, they said. They looked through all the scriptures. They studied about the prophets. They studied all these people and what they've said. And they expected Jesus for years to come into their lives so they wouldn't have to go out and work every day to try to get atone for their sins. And finally, this guy named Jesus comes. He preaches and teaches and works miracles and heals people and does all these things. And then he tells them, I'm going to die one day. I'm going to die, but I'm going to be raised back from the dead, and you're going to be saved. And so this happens. All this happens over this weekend. And they think, man, Jesus is going to raise back up from the dead on Sunday, and we're going to be able to do that after him so we can be forgiven our sins. But it doesn't happen, is what they think. And this is what creates all their sadness. And they are so upset because this was their chance for atonement of sins, for sacrifice of sins. Some people call this the gospel according to Cleopas. It includes basic facts about the Messiah, but in the end, there's actually no gospel at all. It starts with Jesus' early life and his ministry, and then it goes to his miracles, and then his death. But what Cleopas' gospels missed was the resurrection of Christ. It didn't have him coming back up from the dead. And without the resurrection, they were forced to believe that Jesus wasn't their true Savior after all. And because of that, they just couldn't be forgiven. And there was no chance for them. And this is what got at them. And what happened in all reality with these people's lives is to the main point of this thing is they got their hopes up. They had expectations about what was supposed to happen. And then it happened. If you look back in verse 21, they say to Jesus, they said, but we had hoped. Some other Bibles say, we're hoping. And what's more, he was supposed to do this and do that. We were hoping that he would do all this for us. But look, man, it just didn't happen. And this is why we are so sad. This is why we are so upset, because our hopes have been crushed. Their hopes and their dreams that they had waited for so long throughout all this time were just crushed. And that's how the things were. And these two men, I think, probably felt the same way that a woman named Ruth Dillo felt back in 1999. I found a news article about this on the internet, and I thought it went well with them. Here's what the story says. Ruth Dillo tells a story. She said, one morning, I was sitting at my sewing machine making clothes for the National Guard. I got pulled from my seat, and the boss called me into his office, so I got up. I went in there, and before I got in there, I saw two men in suits sitting there waiting for me with a sad look on their face. And I knew what it was about. Just a year before this happened, her son Clayton was sent off to work in Operation Desert Storm. And she'd sent him off a year before in Kuwait to help with all these problems. And she said, these two men in the suit, they didn't have to say a word. They said, before I got to the office, before I sat down, before I cried, I knew what had happened. She said, when you see this, you just expect the worst of things. And the worst was what she got. The people in the suits told her the previous day, they were informed just 2 hours before a ceasefire was called, her son, Clayton, was killed by a cluster bomb. He'd suffered injuries. They tried to get him back to health. They sent him to a hospital. They did all these things, but he died on the deathbed, is what they told her. And she was crushed. And these men in the gospel, the Cleopas and his friend, this is how they would feel. He was dead. Somebody they'd been expecting to live was just dead. Ruth Willow just goes on to say, she said, these are the only words I remember him saying, that he, my son, was dead. He was dead. That's all that played over in my mind every night and every day. She said, the next day, I went to go be with my older son and try to find comfort with him. Family members came over, but they didn't help at all. Tears came, quietness came, laughter, as we shared stories with our friends and family about all Clay had done and all about all he was. But as the night went on and as the friends left, I just cried my eyes out. I sat in my bed. I couldn't sleep. I got up, walked around the house, but there was nothing I could do to bring my son back. And she looked at a picture, she says, of him up on the mantel beside his bedpost. And she said over and over to himself, my son cannot be dead. He just can't be. This isn't what's supposed to happen. This is not what is supposed to happen. This has got to be a mistake. Clay isn't dead. He's coming back. And she kept on telling herself this over and over again. And this is just the same thing that happens to these people in our story. Ruth Dillow sent her son off in an airplane one day, expecting him to be back a year later. But instead of him coming off the plane, running and hugging her and celebrating with her, he came back in a body bag. Her little boy that she sent off just came back just dead, lifeless, and without any emotion at all. And this is the same thing that Cleopas and his friend had to witness, that Jesus had to die and be raised back up so they could have a sacrifice for their sins, but that just didn't happen. He stayed in the tomb, or he was gone. He's not alive anymore, that Jesus has just stayed dead. And these two people are feeling this way, with broken dreams, with broken hearts, with broken emotions. This is what they felt. And I believe the same thing happens to us today, just like Ruth Dillow, just like Cleopas and his friends. Sometimes we wonder about things. We get our hopes built up, expectations. It's happened to us all this semester about things we wanted, things we've asked for, and things that we haven't got. Some of the things are minor. They're just small. Maybe it's something as minor as a girl thinking maybe a guy's interested in her and finds out she's not, or maybe the other way around. Maybe a broken heart or a heartache. Or maybe a test that we study for so hard and we finally get the grade back and we thought we did so well on it, but that doesn't happen. I know one thing that I get my hopes up about is when I'm walking through the classics line at Gano and I'm way in the back and I look in the front and I said, man, we got chicken today. I woke up there and there's pork with fat all over it. Don't you hate that? But that's just something. We get our emotions just built up so full and things, and finally all our expectations come to this final point and all of a sudden they just break and we're broken to pieces because of things that happen. There's minor things and there's major things. There's a few seniors in here, I'm sure. I'm a freshman. I was a senior last year in high school, but I know that this is a bigger deal being a freshman or a senior in college. You've got a lot of things planned out for you. I mean, you're moving on after this. You've got jobs lined up. Maybe you got a summer internship coming up. But for some of you, maybe you think you had something lined up and it just wasn't there. Or maybe when you're a freshman, you're my age. And when you started out like me, you thought, man, by the time I get out of college, I'm going to be a counselor. I'm going to be a preacher. I'm going to be working here. I'm going to be working there. I'm going to be a teacher somewhere. But it just doesn't happen. You didn't get into grad school like you thought you would. You didn't get that job. You didn't get that internship. And things just started breaking apart and crumbling, and your expectations just haven't been met. And that hurts. That's a big hurt for all those dreams to be broken. Some of us in life have grown up in a home where we expected our parents to stay together, but that didn't happen. I've had a lot of friends that tell me that, you know, when I was little, I thought my mom and my dad would just be together forever. They get in college, they get on with life later on. Families split apart, they break. Expectations, hearts, feelings are hurt and broken because of those things. And it's bad. And Some of us come to a college like Creed Hardman or Harding or other places like this where we think we're going to be so spiritually uplifted and so this and that, and my heart's just going to be full of spiritual things all the time of God. Jesus is going to be there hour by hour, second by second. And we get here and we find out that there's life to college too. There's things that's going to put us down. Friends that hurt us, stab us in the back, grades that just bring us down because we get upset because we want to do good. Different things come along in our life and they just break us. And just like these men had hoped, just like these men were hoping for Jesus to be the one to fix all their problems, to fix all their sins, we're hoping the same thing in our lives too. But sometimes instead, our hopes, our expectations, they're not met. And we finally just get crushed so hard and just completely leveled by things in our life that aren't met that we thought they should be. Things that we've handed over to Jesus that haven't been met. Things that we've handed over to friends that they just let go of and let us deal with again. So many different things that we look forward to that are just broken and end up not going along anymore. And I think it's the way that we work sometimes, just humans in general. Things are going to happen. We get excited about it. Hooray! You know, hurrah! You know, this is going to happen. It's going to be good. We get our hopes built up, and things are going to happen. It happens to me all the time, and I know it happens to y'all. But everything is going to go fine. We get so excited about it. Things don't work. It was horrible anyways. You know, that basketball game we didn't win, who cares? We're not going to win it anyway. Maybe the trophy we didn't get, you know, who thought we were going to win that anyway? Who was the dumb person who put the hopes in that anyway? That's the way we work. When things don't work out for us, we just push it away from us. And I believe this is what the road to Emmaus is all about, what these guys were walking on. It's the road that started out with enthusiasm. It's the road that started out with hope, started out with high expectations. But along the way, it just became a road of disappointment. It became a road of heartaches. I used to know a lady that worked for my mom a time back ago. She's passed away now. But one thing she said a lot of the times, and it was so pessimistic, but sometimes I believe it hits with us. She said, a day that starts out with laughter usually ends in tears. Now, isn't that a good way to look at things? That's a horrible way. But for some of us, that sounds familiar to us. A day that starts out with joy and laughter, sometimes it just ends in tears and broken hearts and feelings. That happens to us. One commentary put it about this story. They said this. They said what should have been the day of hope for these men became a day of hope extinguished. And that was the commentary to their lives, but I think it could be the commentary to some of our lives as well. Things that we thought were going to happen that just got crushed. I think this story also hits home with people here, people everywhere that are struggling with faith problems. These men were. It's not a bad thing. It's just things that happen sometimes. Sometimes they question it like this. They were questioning through all this road. Is God really alive? Is God, or is Jesus really alive? Is Jesus really coming back? This is something they struggled with. This was a big faith thing for them. Because for all this time, they thought finally that Jesus could be the one that could save me. And now they think it didn't happen. Their faith was shattered. It was broke all along, all the way throughout this road. But then Jesus comes along. Look at verse 25. I want you to see how Jesus just works with these men. But first, before we read on, just notice how Jesus never interrupts. He never butts in. He never says, hey, you're wrong about what you said. Or, hey, this needs to be fixed. Or, hey, you need to get yourself right. Your faith needs to be fixed. Why are you giving up so easily? One thing Jesus never does is interrupt. He never does. He just sits patiently and listens. And it's the same thing he does for us time after time. Look at verse 25. Jesus said to them, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all the prophets have spoken. Did not Christ have to suffer these things and then enter into glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. One thing here you can take foolish, the word foolish, for clueless. You're also clueless to believe what the prophets have said. And they were. They were foolish to believe all this. And continue, look at verse 28. It says, as they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus acted if he was going to go farther. They urged him strongly, stay with us. It's nearly evening. The day is almost over. So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took the bread. They gave thanks, broke it, and began to eat it. Then their eyes would open and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us? And you see, these men, they were on the road, and throughout this whole road, all they were focused on, the only thing that was on their minds throughout this whole time is Jesus has not been raised from the dead. Jesus is dead. He is dead. He is not alive, and we cannot be saved. They focused on this one big problem. That's all it was, just a problem that concerned their lives and just ended their lives day after day, that Jesus is dead. That's all their hearts, all their minds was worried about, was that one thing. But they finally, in verse 32, they recognize who they're talking to. They understand who they've been talking to all along. After a 7-mile walk down a road, finally Jesus reveals himself. They started upset, but along the Emmaus Road, they gradually worked themselves into seeing the Lord. And you have to notice all these things. They started out with the scriptures. Then their hearts burned. They were breaking bread. Their eyes would open, and then finally they could see. And throughout this whole story, even though they were so concerned about this one thing, I think deep down in their hearts, these men really wanted to know that Jesus was there for them, that Jesus was back alive. And finally, they invited him into their home. But when they did that, they also invited him into their hearts as well. And he entered in both places, their hearts and their home. And they started out with disappointment, but in the end, they got a fire burning in their hearts because Jesus was finally there. Their prayers and their hopes and dreams have been lifted. And I'm convinced that us as people, we feel the same way than they. One thing as Christians, what we want to see is the mark of God in our lives. We want to know that God is there, that God is working, that God is fixing this problem for me, that God is fixing that problem, that God is helping me through all my life. What blessings he gives us, what all these things he's doing for us. But I think, like these men, before we can see him working in us, we have to take the time to want him working in us. We have to take the time to sit down and say, Lord, I need you in my life, and to know, to open our hearts to him so we can come in so that we can see him in his actions. That's what we want as people, to know that he is there for us. But for some of us, like we started out with expectations in the beginning of the school year, we've just thrown them out the window in the end. That's the same thing sometimes, like these men, we do with Christ. We start out, throw them out the window because we just give up as Christians, and we give up so easily, just like these men have. One man said, only those who desire Jesus' company will come to further the realization of his identity. Only those who desire Jesus' company will come to further realization of his true identity. And I'm thankful it's the year, end of the year as a freshman. I've learned a lot of things, like I said before. And one thing I've learned is that money does not come easy. And I learned that hard way about my bank account. I have a job on the side. I work, I do yard work, and I'm able to make some money. But one thing I learned is I got to stop spending so much of it. Maybe you learned that before too. So this past weekend, I made some money. So Catherine, my girlfriend, and I, we went on a date. It's called the penny date. I don't know if you've heard of it. But what you do is you start out, and I said, Catherine, take this penny. This is my gift to you. I said, now I want you to do is pick a number between 1 and 20. She said, okay. She thought a minute. She picked 18. It's a high number. 18, that's like the second highest number you can pick. But anyways, or third. I failed math. All right. Anyway, so she picked the number 18. I said, okay, now I want you to flip. I was laughing at this because, man, 18. All right. Now flip the coin. She flipped it. Tails. All right. We go left. If she would have flipped heads, we would have went right. So we did this. We did it. Well, we didn't do it 18 times because it had been 12 o'clock before we ate anywhere. But we did it about 10 times. She flipped it. We went left. She flipped it again. We went right. Left, right, left, right. We ended up out of all places in Corinth, Mississippi. I said, okay, finally we're somewhere to eat. I'm hungry. It's about 7 o'clock at night. I said, where do you want to eat? I just made some money. Where do you want to eat, Catherine? I want to eat at a good steakhouse. Yeah. Yeah, just like Catherine, spending my money. Anyway, I'm kidding. I'm sorry. But we walk in there. It's called Russell's. Maybe you've ate there before. Great place to eat. So we walk in there. We go sit down. But as we're walking to the back, there's a member from Catherine's church there that I know too. His name's Walt, Mr. Walt. Wonderful guy. I love him to death. So we talked to him and his wife for a little bit. And throughout this whole time, No offense to you. I'm thinking about all the money that I have to spend now that I just made. Like, really, I am. Because, I mean, I have a hard time with money sometimes. Like we all do in college. And I'm thinking, man, I just made this. Now I'm spending it. Which I love to spend it on her. But, you know, I need the money as well to get back home and get places and do things. And I was like, oh, my goodness. So, and I've prayed about all this. And I know this. So we go to sit down. We order what we want. We get two sirloins, about $40. So we go to the salad bar. As we're up there to the salad bar, we're getting our tomatoes, getting our lettuce, getting our bacon bits, you know, everything you get on a salad. Well, Mr. Walt comes up. He shakes my hand. He said, I just want you to know how good you are. He puts two 20s in my pocket. He says, I hope you have a good night. That made me feel so good. It really did. But the thing that it showed me, I got to thinking about it. I really did. And I got to thinking about how it was so random that we ended up at that steakhouse in Corinth. And at the same time, he happened to be there. I had not planned where we were going to go. Catherine didn't plan where we were going to go. Nobody had planned this out. It was just off the limb where we were going to go. And so he paid for that. And afterwards, as we were driving back, I just thought to myself, it's like, I've been praying about this a lot, about my financial situation, about the things that I go through in life. And I believe Jesus knows that. And maybe this isn't some kind of, you know, huge thing, but I know that through Mr. Walt and through these things that Jesus was actually there just watching out for me, because he knows that's something I'm struggling with and that's something that can get to my heart. He knows that the root of all evil is money. It can be. Money is the root of all evil. And I believe Jesus intervenes like that sometimes in our lives, like he did with us at that steakhouse, to tell us, hey, man, I'm watching out for you. But before I could see him there in that moment, before I could see Jesus working in my life, before I could see any of that, and recognize that, I had to realize and want Jesus in my heart. I had to want him there before he can display actions, before I could see him. It's something that I needed to have. It's something that I wanted. And that was great. And it was good to have stakes paid for and all that. But what was even better was to see Jesus watching out for me because I wanted him there in my heart. And I believe that's what he does for all people, for us, for these people on the road. That once we open our hearts up to him, he enters in and blesses us to show us that he is truly there. And I believe that he is. So one thing I believe we need to ask ourselves is, are we truly looking for Jesus in our day-to-day lives, whether it be big or small? Are we looking for him day by day? Little blessings, big blessings. You know, there's this quote that I hear all the time. Count your blessings, not your worries. Count your many blessings, not your worries. And I believe that's something as Christians we should do. Because we get so discouraged. We get all these expectations that aren't met, that we've been talking about tonight. We get all these things just bundled up in our life. And we start looking at the bad like these men did. We start looking at all the things that hadn't gone right. All the things that had gone right in these men's lives were the miracles that Jesus worked. The way that Jesus had touched them. The way Jesus had done things for other people. The way that they had seen Jesus and know the power of his greatness. They recognize that. And we have to look for him in the same way, whether it just be through a friend or maybe a good grade on a paper that you know you've been stressing out about. Little things to recognize and open our hearts to Jesus to know that he is there for us. Because what we can do is just totally, completely just not care anymore and say, I'm going through so much stuff. God, you're not helping out. Just stay over there and get discouraged. And look at their joy in verse 33. I love this. In verse 33, it says, they got up and returned once to Jerusalem. I mean, they put down their meal for this, man. There they found the 11 and those with them, assembled together and saying, it is true, the Lord is risen and has appeared to Simon. Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when they broke bread. So they were so happy about all that had happened. They were so happy about this. They were excited because finally, my voice cracked, laryngitis. They were excited because finally, at this exact moment, Jesus was alive. All their expectations had been filled. All their hopes were finally come together. And now Jesus is alive. And they love that. They have to get up. They have to tell somebody. They have to let people know that Jesus is alive because everything that they were worried about in the first place finally came together. And they knew that Jesus was alive and he was there. He was there for them. He was there to help them. And he was there so that one day they could make it to heaven and get salvation and be free from their sins. And this is what we have to know. But notice what Jesus did with them. He said he taught the scriptures with them. He went through all the prophets. He went through Moses and everybody. And he opened up the scriptures. They looked for Jesus in the scriptures with him. They looked throughout all these things. They wanted to know about Jesus still when Jesus explained it to them. And they wanted to see him there. They wanted him. They studied about him. They looked for him. And finally, in the end, when they got together, when they sat down with him, and they looked around all these and stood in fellowship with God by breaking bread and taking time to pray to God. Finally, in that moment, not when they were walking down the road worried about all their problems, but in the moment where they were sitting down with their friends in fellowship together, giving thanks to God for what they had and warning them in their hearts after all that had happened throughout that day, that's finally when Jesus exposed himself to them. So are we as people looking for that Jesus? Are we given time like that? Because only through the want in our hearts we'll be able to see him. You remember the story about Ruth Dillow I was telling you about earlier, about the Marine that died? There's some more to that story that I'd like to share. It's truly amazing. The magazine said that she was up late one night. She couldn't sleep because of all the stress that was going on for all the problems that had just happened. She was so upset because of all this. Her son, her baby boy that she had kept for 20 years had just died, had just passed away, and she could not sleep. And so one thing she wasn't quite prepared for that night was a phone call right in the middle of the night. She said, "I didn't want to answer. I didn't want to get up. My voice was hoarse because I'd been crying so much. My eyes were tired. I couldn't sleep anyway, so I just decided I would answer it." And the voice she said she heard over the phone, first thing he said, "Hi, Mom, this is Clayton. This is Clayton." It says Ruth froze. She said, "Are you sure this is Clayton? You've been declared dead." Her mind went racing, the magazine said. She said she feared she was being tricked. Somebody was playing some kind of trick on her. She said, "Come on, believe this is me," Clayton said. "Just believe it's your son." And he'd been calling from a hospital over in Saudi Arabia from all these things. He finally got in contact with her somehow. And so he had to explain to her. He said, "Mom, I know the story. I know what happened. They explained to me what they told you, but that's not what happened at all." She said, "A cluster bomb did hit us, but it just hurt my foot. It just gave me my energies. I'm alive. I'm alive." And still through all this, she said that I didn't believe it was him at all. And so she said, "I had to ask him a question. I said, 'What did I call you when you were little, Clayton?'" And Clayton said he thought for a moment because he couldn't think of what she called him. He said, finally it came to him. He said, "You used to call me the little garbage disposal." She said, finally in that moment, she recognized that it was truly her son. She said she knew. She cried tears of joy. She said her body started to shake. She said, finally, she came to a realization that her boy, her son, who she thought was dead, was alive, and she could be happy again. In the same way that Ruth Dillow, in the same way that Cleopas and his friend just held their hearts out for Jesus, are we doing the same things? Are we holding out for the hope to know that Jesus is still there? Or are we just decided we'd throw it out the window? Because right now, with all the stress going on at the end of the semester, and with summer about to be here, it's such an important time in our life to finally recognize and open our hearts to the question, you know, are we looking for Christ in our lives today? Because if we don't want him there, he won't be there. But if we open our hearts up, give him our problems and tell him and lay it out on the table, he'll be there for us when we need him. But it takes us to look. And some of us have stopped looking. We have. We've just decided to be blind. We haven't recognized Jesus in front of us. So tonight, maybe some of you have stopped looking for Jesus. These men did. Ruth Dillow stopped looking for his son. And some of us tonight have just stopped looking for the Christ in our lives to fix our problems. So much stuff has happened and we're focused on the big thing instead of realizing that Jesus is still here. Jesus is still there for us in our lives and we need him here. Tonight's the last night of college Devo encounter, but it's never too late to encounter Christ in our lives. But it takes us to want him there in our lives for him to enter in and help us with all the things that we go through today. So whatever it is in your life tonight, whether it be this problem, whether there be any problem, we all struggle with things, just like these men did. Whatever it may be, why don't you come right now as we stand and as we sing together.